They say, do not bite the hand that feeds. But when all the crumbs, spilt like blood across the floor, are filled with that sickly sweet poison, what are we to do but escape? And what weapons are left to us but our teeth? Season 1, Episode 2, Hand in Unlovable Hand, in which there is change, good and bad, and everything in between. Hey, I don't really know if anyone is hearing this out in the vast swaths of cables and sparks, but I'm sorry I uploaded this recount a few days later than I said I would. Things have been rough lately, and I know journaling is supposed to be a healthy way of processing these things, but sometimes it feels like I'm writing this in my blood, you know? Like every unearthed memory is draining something in me. Well, I guess I'll keep you little freaks updated when I can. The deep shrouds of sleep rustle like velvet curtains adorning a stage. After all, are we not all players? And the world, the globe, destined to burn around us? Here, before the night's terror, it is soft, almost safe, though that could never truly be. The cocoon of groggy void is warm, in the way a blanket is on a morning in winter when you wished you were dead. Suddenly, this small comfort, carved from the walls of pain, even this is gone, and again I am forced to exist, if only in a world of dreams. It is night in the unworld, a place long gone enough to still have stars shining through the clouds. There is an inn a little ways down this abandoned highway, the tarmac a cracked and broken prayer wheel to gods that were never popular enough to call them forgotten. The grass grows over their bones. Trees are far too individual to consider them all good or evil, as malleable as even those concepts are. Though these, in their starvation, have taken to consuming the corpses of those who die here. But can they really be blamed? Theirs is a hunger of survival and terror, not of greed. Something still lives here, despite that age-old corrosion, the way the place reeks of abandonment, small death. The neon sign above the inn does try its best to warn people to leave. I know someday I will return. For now, though, I am not truly anywhere. A deer wanders, the lone sign of life in this semi-void of abandonment, towards the endless stretch of tarmac, that scarred and desolate stretch of land. There is innocence in its eyes, masking the horror it has seen in its short time scavenging the land here. A moor of endlessly sharp, wet teeth line the wine-dark, stained mouth. This quivering young thing carries the history of the stars, whose iron form its blood, and it feels every single one of those years in its fragile, cracking bones. It is not long for this world, as has been my soul, ever fleeting before the prime of its body. I struggle in my incorporeal form, my flesh melting across the land, like an oil spill shining in the light of our dying sun. As always, I cannot avert the horror. I can only catastrophize. The thing that is not quite a deer turns its head to the space that contains the idea of me, and smiles in a way that should not be possible. Its eyes are gaping pools of tar, its mouth a pit of endless knives. It knows its fate, I think, as do I. The tarmac misted with the rain of months. Feel an instant fear for it. Arching up the coils of my spine, I now realize to be existent, but scattered. Dusted across the landscape. Despite the paste and powder of my body, I sense the rush of pain, the electrical signals, rushing chemicals as the roar begins. A dirty, great petrol engine turning down the entryway of this forgotten lane. Twin suns of its flashlights burning in the cold night. Only now I realize the thing in the shape of a deer had not been breathing. Now the air came ragged and blade-like into its pathetically small lungs. This too I felt. Now the two of us, suddenly aware of the reality of our situation, that we were not alone for what could be the first time in our short, sad lives. I think, now nestled in the quiet before the storm, that somehow in this dream world, the thing that is on the road represents the worst of me as it begins to smile. The vehicle rushes down the altar of the road, and I begin to take my place inside the pulsating meat of the thing's brain. I have just enough time to dwell on the thought of what this thing represents. It makes a small jolting move, as if to run, though even if it had now the desire for life that it hadn't had in its many years, it could not act upon such a thought, as its hooves, coal shining and moist with the running sweat of terror, are beginning to meld with the tarmac, running like molten rock. Together, we feel the pain of each and every nerve ending, twisting within their now liquid casing. It does not run as the great shadow of its destruction looms, only bows its head in regret for all the things that could have been of it. The car slowly approaches. This will not be a quick ending. Blood pounds through the soft ears of the body which I now inhabit as the inky rubber of the wheel approaches its lowered snout, crushing bone as it runs, first down the center of the deer's skull, rolling with a sluggish speed, then following the delicate curvature of our spine, popping vertebrae like ice between teeth. I scream from the throat of the deer, as our maw is cracked open, spraying the confetti of our jaws in all directions. The scream continues long after the computer of our brain has been pounded into a grotesque pâté, long after the warm cave of our trachea has been flooded with backwashed blood and cerebrospinal fluid, and crushed by the weight of the grooved rubber. Bones shot along the pathway, piercing the third walls of our flesh, long after our desiccated body should not have been able to produce any sound but the settling of long-dead flesh and the release of the gases of decay. That wine-dark mouth now spread across the ground, caught along the ever-turning wheels, and somehow still feeling. The nerves connecting to the burning eyes of the radio towers, shrouded in mist and hope, transmitting their pain back through to every speck of the brain, even those flung across the ancient wood of the nearby pines. I have no mouth, yet I must scream. Our vocal cords still singing their ragged song through the cascade of burst flesh. Our eyes still see despite their state, similar to balloons overfilled with gelatin and blood and thrown from a window. Our lungs quiver full of flesh and fluid more than air. We should not be alive. And yet, we cling on to this vestige of existence until the sun rises again and we slip away. At least for the deer, it means peace. I awoke, trembling, in a stolen car. The mist coating the windows was cold in fear of the coming autumn. The forest that could have been my childhood, but was not quite, is still visible through the frosted glass. I am ever poetic as the sleep sheds from my eyes in the morn, and as the sleep lingers too, afraid to come in the evening. I think now to myself how woeful it is that the way so many people see technology, so at odds with the nature it inhabits, as an enemy to art and life. Something so new, a knife meant to wound the land we hold so dear. But truly, what is a knife separated from the hands of its wielder but tortured metal, wishing for the embrace of its earthly home? And those servers buzzing quietly as the sun bleeds its slow death into the sky, the only sound in the cold abyss of their cage. Those veiny wires carrying the same electrical pulses as our wet hearts. Those radio towers calling out through the wastelands, the feeble cries of fallen angels decaying into our earth. Are they not as organic as the trees which grow even thinner, or the mountains who are older than bones? I can smell the coming rain on the air. It reminds me of the days when I had a better sense of smell and crooked, sharp teeth, and I knew who I was beneath all these people suits. I stretch the arms left to me by fate and misfortune in this empty, frosted car, and I feel the ghosts of my claws retracting. What could have been wings stretching from the bursting flesh of my shoulder blades. I can tell it's going to be a long day, as the pain in the meats of my back and mind wake with me. At least the one that worms through my rotting brain is treatable, or so they say. I open the ash-stained door and begin to stretch my legs. The white lines of parking spaces jagged and uneven, the gravel harsh and cold on my bare feet. At least it is cold enough in these mountains to be clothed in sleep. I wander slowly as I wipe the crusts of sleep from my eyes and begin to walk in the direction of the nearest town. What life was like for the person who owned the rundown truck before me. How old they had been, and with the way the ash entered every crevice of the vehicle, I wondered too how long their lungs had left. But then again, who was I to judge? I've kept clean my short life, and look where it's gotten me. Despite my years of practice skipping lunches, I would have to find a way to sustain myself as I ran. I pulled my jacket closer around me, thinking about how meager the funds I had been able to make it out with had been, how many books I could fit beneath the denim before I was noticed. that sustenance too would be an issue of my mind when there is nothing for it to voraciously consume. It turns to those thoughts which I do my best to keep buried. I scratch absent-mindedly at my arms, gathering the top layer of death beneath my woefully short fingernails, wishing I did not have sensory issues preventing them from becoming the claws they should have been. My disheveled appearance attracts stares that I feel as hot knives impaling my soul. I love the semi-androgyny that I possess, not so much the world's opinion of it. I inhale the gentle morning scents of autumn. My nose is not what it used to be. Back in my early days, when I would boast to my peers of its supposedly supernatural powers, I think even then, before I came across the terminology for what I felt, buried deep in the archived web pages of an era long lost, I felt the disconnect between my mind and the concept of humanity. I wander through the old brick of this town I have found myself in. I feel alone here, truly and deeply. The mountains act, I think, as an intensifier for the coldest of our emotions. The fear and existentialism that hide themselves within the bleached surface of our bones, the slowly yellowing marrow that encases our withered souls. Of bones. They say that E degrades them, increases your risk of blood clots, thickens it. They never talk about the benefits, the reduced risk of heart attack, prostate cancer, balding, but I'm rambling. I think now that I am free of them, I have the chance to grow, to change, even though I could never really achieve my true form. I think I can make this awful flesh prison a little more comfortable to inhabit, at least. There is a comfort in knowing the pain will end one day, but even more than that, there is a terror in the end. Mostly, it's unpredictability. Soon, I arrive at my destination, a cracked and dust-covered sign hanging above yet another dilapidated brick building, proclaiming a warm breakfast and unknowably large stock of texts for sale. Though fuel for the coming journey was not the only reason for my visit, nor was the love of the aesthetic generated by the certain type of decay with which this small town buried in the mountains on the other side of the sprawling forest to the one that I grew old in over the course of far too few years. There was someone here I knew of who may be of help to my true goal. I would not run forever. Eventually, I would need to rest. I ordered smashed avocado and feta. There is a poached egg and balsamic glaze. This will be all I survive upon for the day. Maybe if I can sneak it out under my coat, there will be instant noodles in the dead of night. But for now, I feast here at a mahogany table, devouring the meal that was blamed for killing the millennial generation. Some would say I am lucky to avoid being one of them. I doubt it. We who are young had our midlife crisis at the tender age of 15 and are rushing now to the end at 30. As I finish, I wander the section containing the books, which seem to draw in far more customers than the promise of food. Surviving on caffeine and spite, I notice a table in the center of a particularly old set of shelves, at which sits a person, around the same age, it seems, as me, though their eyes and the deep ink underneath betray the strain of their soul. They have been reading cards for another, who leaves as I approach. I believe this may be the person I need to speak with. "Hello, may I have your name?" I say to the person still sitting. They have a shock of flame hair. "You may call me Autumn. How may I help you?" They respond, my eye twinkling at the turn of phrase. They are clearly aware of things which would have taken anything given so freely, especially a name. "I was wondering if you wanted to help me kill God?" I asked as I sat across from them.